you know, if it wasn't for jobs I've got to do, chores, jobs, responsibilities, all those day-to-day things, I could get on with the spiritual life. That's the sort of view that has lurked in the background of my psyche in the past, or it comes up now and again. Oh, if it wasn't for, you know, in Worcester, we've got to look for a new centre, we're looking for a new centre, and it can turn into a barrier instead of something to grow into and enjoy. And in regard to that, on a recent mindfulness course that we were delivering in Worcester, Vajragupta presented Stephen Covey's grid. Stephen Covey writes to managers, as far as I remember. This grid of important, not important, urgent, not urgent. Who knows this grid? about a third or half people know this grid. And he said, Vajragupta presented it, and he said, it seems a bit dry to present in a Buddhist-led course, and we've got this management speak. But he went on to explain why. And it relates to what my point about day-to-day tasks. And he said, the idea, can you see it? Important, not important, urgent, not urgent. And you end up, if you fill in the squares, you end up with urgent and important. I'll put it in red. Not urgent, but important. Neither urgent or important. Urgent, but not important. Get these combinations. So you can relate all your day-to-day tasks, your to-do list, in regard, they fit somewhere on this grid. And what Vajragupta said, the point is that if you try and focus on the not urgent but important, it means you're ahead of the game. You're prepared in advance. So if I'd written this talk 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I could relax about this morning. I mean, I was pretty ahead of it. So this whole point of if you're looking ahead and planning and doing what needs to be done in advance, it puts you in a relaxed place. And that means when urgent and important things crop up, you can meet them. You can meet the urgent things, the things that come out of the blue. And it really spoke to me, because I've spent a lot of my time just crisis management. I'm not very, my thinking isn't very organised actually. Writing talks isn't easy for me. I don't find an easy flow of ideas. So it spoke to me, a way to really help that is to look at the week ahead, look at 2 weeks ahead, 3 weeks ahead, and get working on those things so I don't end up in a crisis. And I've spent a lot of time doing that, just what's happening today or tomorrow. Oh right, I've got to write a talk, I've got to prepare for a class, I've got to do something at work. So that's a discipline for me, to look ahead and just plan ahead and be prepared. I thought I'd share that with you. So it might seem dry, but actually for me, it puts me in a really much better place when I do that. And if I'm relaxed, I can practice better. It's not when I sit down to meditate, I'm not in a state. It just means I'm in a better state. And that means I can be clearer and more responsive to situations and people. Okay, so that's that one. So I've got because I haven't got a neat thread of ideas about talk, I've just got some random things that I do and things that I'm disciplined about and things that I'm not so disciplined about. In my 20s, I was exercise mad. I just did, at one point I was doing about 27 hours of exercise every week. I had a job teaching Keep Fit, and I was about 27 hours of exercise. And I could push myself. In fact, I could push myself without stopping. I didn't mind. I enjoyed that pain you get when you push yourself, like weightlifting or whatever. I enjoyed all that. I applied the same strategy to mental training when I came across meditation and Dharma. It doesn't work. So I'm going to leap to my ordination course. So I had this idea, if you were struggling, say meditation with a dharmic issue or meditation or find it difficult, that I would just do more, just push more. So when I got to my ordination course, I remember I'd get to the evening
And the puja, there's quite a long evening on the ordination course, quite a long meditation and long puja. And I got to puja and I'd just be slurring the words. By the time I got to evening, I was just going, and I couldn't remember the particular lines. There was and or in the lines. I just got it wrong every night for 4 months. I would just be slurring my way through the puja because I was tired. And I said, I'm a bit tired in the evening. So I have a nap in the afternoon. Have a nap. Have a nap in the afternoon that you're choking. My answer was, do more. So after lunch, I'll just do another meditation. That was my answer, do more. I had one strategy that didn't really work. So what happened was, during the course, in the afternoon meditations, I just ended up feeling claustrophobic, actually. Really tight and claustrophobic and uptight was my experience. In the Sona Sutta that Matt read last night, the Buddha said, if you try too hard, you end up restless. And that's also an experience of mine. After retreats, I can go home and feel very restless. And that's a sign, the Buddha said, that's a sign you've been trying too hard. So my antidote to that has been, let's see. Well, if I try too hard, say I'm doing the mindfulness of breathing, right, focus on the breath, go for it. Where's the breath? Focus, 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 breath, breath, breath. But actually, you'll know that you have to check in with yourself first to what you actually feel like first, your emotions, your thoughts, issues arise all the time. And meditation is really just a vehicle for those things just to arise. Issues for you, your past, your conditioning, your painful experiences, positive experiences. So we need to check. This is what I've been doing. Really getting into body awareness over and over again. So if I sit, if I'm not comfortable, I say, where's the discomfort then? Where is it? Is it here? Is it here? Where is it? Feel it in the body. There's a correlate in the body of your mental discomfort. Feel it in the body and allow awareness to work on it and unknot it and unravel it gently. Now this can take a long time. So when I've been on longer retreats, and you've got the luxury of time, I might spend hours doing a double sit, the whole double sit doing that if necessary. If I've still got that feeling of discomfort or knottiness somewhere in the body, I'll spend as long as it takes. And then the next meditation, just move on to the next thing. So retreats have that luxury of time, that you can do that. So you can really turn towards your experience. So the antidote to trying too hard, one antidote, is to turn towards your current experience and say, well, how do I really feel? That Vedana, the feeling tone, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Turning towards it. And it just seems infinite in the body. How far you can go with that just seems infinite. So you can just keep going with that. It does seem a wonderful journey, actually. And that's my antidote to striving too hard. Actually, I was on a retreat recently and I was really surprised. Two people expressed different views at the beginning. One said, I don't know how to meditate. A very experienced order member, actually. And the other one said, if I meditate too much, I get alienated. So you know this idea of alienation is where you're detached from your emotions. You're not really in touch with how you feel. You're not in touch with what you really want, how you really feel. You just do the practice without being in touch with yourself. So you end up split, alienated. Well, the answer is the same. You turn towards your experience. How to meditate is you turn towards your experience. So when I've come back off retreat feeling very restless, before that was a big painful issue for me because I wasn't really accepting it. And now I just go, oh, I'm restless. That's all right. It's all right to be restless. Be restless. Feel it. Feel it in the body and move on. So I'm more patient about that now. I accepting the current experience, acknowledging it fully, before moving on. Okay, another one is about absorbing moments of positive moments, moments of clarity. So somebody on the retreat this weekend said to me they had, after the puja on Friday night, they had a lovely, colourful experience where they felt very there and sort of protected. This sort of colour came around them. And they said to me what they did after that was just sat for an hour afterwards, just with that experience, a very positive experience. And that's ideal. That's the thing to do. I haven't done that in the past. Sometimes when I've had a very positive experience, a bit of realized, a bit of vision, a bit of being closer to the truth, as Paramudita said, I've gone, no, it's just been too much for me to bear. You can find positive experiences difficult to bear. So the discipline about that is really allowing it to be. Just sitting, that just sitting practice, not doing anything particular, not doing something and not doing something. Just allowing those experiences to permeate through you. Allow them to affect you. It takes time, it takes patience. Allow them to permeate through you. That's what I try to do. It can be scary to change. Here we are in the business of change, and like Paramudita said, that can be scary. We don't know what we're going to be like when we change. That can be scary. So we need to be patient and just sit with it. Okay. Moving on to another area, communication, in regard to communication. I can find it difficult to express things like resentment to the person I'm resentful to. And I can hold on to that for a long time. But when I do, it's always there, sort of poisoning, tainting my experience, my communication with them. It's in the background, it's not resolved. So that's a real discipline for me, actually, is to express myself. And I think the discipline is taking the risk. Because when I have done that, nothing bad has ever happened. You know, maybe we've sulked a bit with each other. Maybe we've gone a bit rah, 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 at first, and then we've come back together and it's been all right. It's always been all right. So taking risks with communication, saying how you feel. Maybe you're not right. Maybe I haven't been right. And you have to take the risk to say it. And they say, well, actually, it's like this. And you go, oh, yeah. There is a risk that you're wrong. The views and upset are partly my own issue. So I'm still working on that one. A point on learning. A point on learning from talks and retreats. I don't know about you, but I've got loads of notebooks full of notes about people's talks. And they're sitting there, unused, unread, and they haven't changed me. I haven't taken them on. I haven't taken on the ideas. So, what I'm beginning to do now is really reread them quickly afterwards. Rewrite them in another wording. Come back to them quickly afterwards and think, what am I going to take from this? I think for me, one thing like Akupa's talk yesterday talked about being wholehearted, the discipline means an aspect of being wholehearted. I thought, oh yeah, I can connect with that. Things you connect with, oh yeah, that one, I'll take that one. Reflect on it. Come back to it, turn it over in the mind. An example of that is, I won't get there. Might come back to that. I've been on retreats like the Anapanasati retreat. Now, embarrassingly, I think I've done it twice. I might have only done it once. I'm not sure. And that shows you that I haven't really taken on the ideas. What happened the first time, there was one at Vajraloka. And there's all this teaching, a very good teaching. I found it difficult in the shrine room to take on what was being taught, so I just reverted to what I do normally. And which was okay, but I didn't learn the Anapanasati method of working with the breath, which actually, if you know, when we do the mindfulness and breathing, once you learned it and you're a regular meditator, well, really, learn the Anapanasati sutta and the method of working with the breath. So I hadn't done it. It's only recently that I've returned to it and read a book on it and really worked on it. So here's another point. How I've worked with that is when reading, read a paragraph and rewrite it in your own words. Do people do that? Read a paragraph, put it down, and then rewrite it at the points in your own words. And that shows whether you really understood it or not. And I actually find it quite demanding and quite a discipline to do. I have to be quite stable and grounded, and my attention needs to be good and strong to be able to do that. So it's a very good practice. Read a paragraph, put it down, rewrite it in your own words. And then, of course, you've made it your own. What do we have time? 5 minutes. Okay, another one. Did a bit of study. I was on an order retreat in Gukyalokrin for September for a month. We did a bit of study, and we looked at some things from Know Your Mind. You know that book, Know Your Mind? Different, all about different mental states. I really recommend it. And we looked at virya, energy, but energy in pursuit of the good. Being energetic, putting your energy into developing more skillful states of mind. Not just lots of effusive energy, but energy in the pursuit of the good, the skillful. Anyway, there's a list of about six, I think it's about six aspects of virya that, if you're being energetic, that apply to you making efforts. And one of them is not letting things, difficulties hold, not knock you back. If you're trying to do something and there's a difficulty, not letting it stop you. Just find another way. So an example is, we're looking for a new centre in Worcester, a new Buddhist centre. Ours is too small now, which is a good problem. It could take years to find a new one. And it's going to be down to me to lead that project. And something that came up was, if we see a shop or a pub or an office, and we think, oh, can that be a Buddhist centre? It needs a change of use, a change of planning with the council. Well, they've started charging just to ask them. So for any property, I said, oh, what about this one? I like this one. Could we change? Do you think we can change that into a place of worship? And that's £170 just to ask the question. So what am I going to do? Ask 10 properties, £1,700. Well, the budget's, only 300k. So I just found that an enormous barrier. And then how expensive a property do we look for when you find out some huge properties just go for a massively reduced price and some don't? So which ones do you put offers in, which ones do you not? So two issues that I just found were inhibiting me and making me a bit despondent about the project. But then I read about this theory about not letting things knock you back. So the answer, really, the discipline is, well, what are you going to do then? It's just, what's the answer? So I tried to found a councillor and asked them, can we get some ground rules from the planning department? Things not to bother with, We did get some information. Don't bother with shops in the city centre. They're very unlikely to get a change of use on them. Great. So and it was interesting that just a tiny bit of information made me feel, right, I'm moving again. I know a bit more. So yeah, not letting things hold you back. That's what I'm trying to work on. I think that'll do. There's quite a lot of points.